Bill Fennelly's here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mendel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media feeds, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mendel, pleased to be joined by the beauties of technology by my colleagues, Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg. We're with you, getting you set for tonight's Jets-Oilers matchup, a 9 o'clock puck drop. We're talking about the Jets, the week that was. We're talking about the week that is to come for the Winnipeg Jets. We're talking about Kevin Cheveldayoff's press conference, his mid-season press conference from earlier this week. It is going to be a busy Saturday morning. Going to also be joined by Sarah Orleski of TSN, Craig Button of TSN, and our buddy Patrick Johnston of Post Media in Vancouver to talk about the Canucks ahead of the Jets' two-game set in British Columbia starting on Monday. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Dave, it's going to be a beautiful day today. I'm not sure that you need the roaring fire behind you. Might get a little hot there with all the kindling going on with that roaring blaze.
Drew, this is for all my hot takes. This is going to be this is how hot they're going to be right there.
Wow, that's going to be some hot takes.
It's going to be some fired up.
You're bringing your A game tonight with all that burning hot opinion you're going to be providing this afternoon or this morning, rather.
Correct.
Ezra, nice to see you. This is my weekly reminder to you that you can now get your beard trimmed at a professional hairstylist.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, but okay. I just think you're jealous, Drew, because all the hair on my head. But, you know, Dave doesn't need a fire for all those takes that he's going to have. They're already hot enough, so you can just turn that off. But, yeah, Drew, I'm not quite ready yet. I've trimmed the mustache a little bit, but, you know, as far as the hair and the beard goes, I'm just, you know, not ready yet. I'm going to keep this going, and, you know, we'll see where it goes. But for now, I'm just embracing my hairy self.
You certainly are a hairy self, so you know, embrace it. That's good. I have no complaints about that. I appreciate your dedication to the beard and the hair and the whole look you got going on there. Anyways, good morning to you guys. Good morning to everybody in the chat room here. Nice to see so many of our friendly faces that join us on Saturday mornings, and then again, of course, for the post game shows after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. Gentlemen, let's start the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. There was some good, there was some bad. You know, the Winnipeg Jets finished the week, the four games that they've played since we were last on air last Saturday, with a record of 2 wins and 2 losses. We go back to last Saturday, the dominant third period, the Winnipeg Jets defeating the Toronto Maple Leafs by that 5-2 margin. They come back on Monday. They lose to the Montreal Canadiens, a game that was marred by giveaways by the Winnipeg Jets. They lost that one 4-2. Bounce back on Wednesday night to defeat the Habs 4-3, holding on for dear life just to get the game into overtime, I might add. And then on Thursday night, the second half of the back-to-back, probably the sleepiest game the Jets played this season, losing to the Edmonton Oilers 2-1. The rematch goes tonight in Edmonton. I guess your thoughts, you know, if you have a macro-level, high-level thought of the Winnipeg Jets so far this week.
Yeah, and, you know, macro level of this North Division, guys, I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, the Jets, Oilers, and Leafs are, you know, battling it out for first place right now, which, you know, a couple of weeks back, it looked like, you know, nobody was going to catch Toronto. To me, the biggest development has been Vancouver and Calgary and the streaks that they've gone on, right? Like, Vancouver's won 4 in a row. They won again last night. They've won 8 of their last 10. And then you've got Calgary, who has points in 7 of their last 10, I believe. I think they're 6-3-1 in their last 10. So that's been the biggest development almost in the North Division, is how Vancouver and Calgary are still in the conversation. And of course, you know, Vancouver has played 3 or 4 more games than the Jets. But yeah, looking at the last 4 games, boys, I mean, you mentioned it, Drew. I mean, there have been a couple of good games. And, you know, we talked about this on the post-game show. You know, the first game against the Habs on Monday night, you know, we thought that, you know, the Jets deserved better. But obviously, you know, the turnovers really cost them. But, you know, that game a couple of nights ago, it was one of the weaker games of the year. And I'm not talking about just for the Jets. I'm talking about both teams. And that's what we expected, right, guys? Like, you know, the Jets get on a plane. They get in. We don't know exactly when they got in, but they got in late. It was probably something like 1 in the morning. And we knew it was going to be a little sluggish. And, you know, they had a pretty good first period, in my opinion. But, you know, it was obviously a game in which there wasn't a lot of offense from either team. And a couple of Connor McDavid goals was really the difference there, even though the Jets were pressing in the third period and had some good chances. But, yeah, I mean, the Jets and Habs games have been close all year long. They've played six times now. And I don't think there's a big difference between these two teams. I think if these two teams meet in the playoffs, I think we could easily have a seven-game series. So I think tonight's game against the Oilers is going to be much more of a game where we can take something out of it. I just don't think you can take a lot of out of the game on Thursday night, guys, considering they're in the middle of this 17-game in 31-day stretch. And you're in a second game of a back-to-back on the road in which the first game was at home and you're really tired. So I don't think much has changed over the past week. I mean, the Jets have made their push. They picked up five of a possible 6 points against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And they showed that they can stick with the Leafs in any type of situation. And now they're only a couple of points back with the game in hand. So you know, this past week was definitely mixed. But I think because of the schedule and the fact that you had that, you know, second game of a back-to-back on the road with both teams, you know, being pretty tired, that game almost kind of muddied the waters. And I don't think was really indicative of how the Jets have played lately.
Dave, you were there on Monday and Wednesday at the arena watching the two games set against the Montreal Canadiens, and of course tuning in Thursday for the second half, and last Saturday, the game that of the season in terms of the most excitement after the game, and the game that had Jets fans feeling the best last Saturday after they defeated the Leafs with that dominant third period effort. What were your observations watching the Jets this week?
Well, I mean, to your point, Drew, I think everybody is feeling after that Saturday game that if you can bottle that up, then you've got yourself a blueprint for success, because, you know, that was, I mean, the Toronto was the team to beat. Now Toronto's, unfortunately for them, has had, I don't think our people in our chat are going to be too upset about the losing streak the Leafs have been on of late. But the fact is that Toronto hasn't been necessarily playing their best hockey. But the truth is the Jets played a very good game on Saturday. And so you thought to yourself, okay, are they going to be able to bottle that up? And, you know, again, what Ezzie's talked about, they had a up and down remainder of their week. And the Thursday game, both teams had to deal with travel. Edmonton coming back from Calgary, Winnipeg coming from Winnipeg after playing back-to-backs. So both teams were at a disadvantage. And Drew, you made the point why that game wasn't played last night versus Thursday night, when, you know, again, there's no fans in the building. So I get that you don't have to worry about paying customers, but you still want to keep people watching the game. And when the games are like that, I don't know how many people are, unless you're really interested in, you know, you have to watch them like we do. Like, how many people are going to stick around and watch that kind of game? Because it wasn't a particularly interesting hockey game.
It was also unfair. Sorry, Dave, to your point. I think it was borderline unfair to the players. I mean, to make them play that game on the second half of a back-to-back when it wasn't necessary.
I agree with you.
With one tweak, that game could be on Friday.
Yeah, and you know, like we see it in the NFL where you can make adjustments to the schedule. And it's like, in any year where there's no repercussions, like it doesn't really make a difference to you. Like normally you have to factor in, okay, we got 15,000 or 20,000 people coming to a building. If we change the time or we change the date, that's impacting them. Well, this season, that's clearly not the case. This is a season where you can make adjustments and you can recognize, because look, these guys are professionals and we get it and they have to do things, but you have to be cognizant of the fact that we are in the most condensed schedule we're ever going to witness in the NHL. I mean, obviously in lockouts, you see condensed schedules as well. But the reality is this is a different factor. And, you know, you had long layoffs. And so to me, you don't really want to take a risk of injury, right? That's what you always are worried about, is that you're going to lose a player because they're not at 100%. And again, it wasn't as if you're giving Winnipeg an advantage over Edmonton. And I can see why they're not doing it. The reality is both teams had played the previous night in different cities, not in the city that they were going to. So to me, it was a mistake by the NHL. And you know, it is what it is. It's done and both teams dealt with it, but it was just a boring hockey game that wasn't particularly interesting. And it really was hard to glean what Ezzie said, glean any real, like, interesting facts from that game.
Takeaways. So, there's nothing really that you can say.
So to me, I would watch tonight's game with interest. And again, we've seen a Jets team that, I don't know, I think they're 9-0-1 or 9-1-0 when they've lost the previous game. So we know that's been the calling card of this Winnipeg Jets franchise throughout the course of this season, and it's an important one. You know, you've got to Ezzy's point, Vancouver, and now look, Vancouver is charging, they're winning, and you obviously want to be winning, but Vancouver's played four more games than Winnipeg right now. You know, the Leafs have played one more game. The Oilers have played three more games. The only team that's tied with, and I think the Flames have played one more as well. The only team that's the same number of games played is the Montreal Canadiens. So that's really, and you still have 3 points up on them. But every game is a four-point game. So you've got Edmonton and Toronto both ahead of you. So this is a critical hockey game. Again, is it a must win? No, but I think it's an important one to get that feeling back, especially as you're on this long road trip out west, that you have to kind of get that good feeling back in your group that you've been able to do every game, almost after almost every loss.
Well, you know, to your point, this is and we'll talk more about this road trip throughout the course of the show, because this road trip is key for the Winnipeg Jets. Succeed on this road trip and you almost bury Vancouver and Calgary. And that starts tonight playing against the Oilers in what is going to be, I think, more reminiscent of a real hockey game between these two teams. I'd expect both teams to be very eager to get a big jump, right from the start of tonight's contest. The Jets didn't skate yesterday. They canceled practice. Obviously, I think Paul Maurice saw that this is this was a tired team that needed some extra time off, that they needed just a day away from the rink in order to get their legs back. I would be surprised if there's any lineup changes for tonight. That's not to say I agree with that, but I would be surprised to see if there are any. Usually, you know, if there's going to be any lineup changes barring injury that we might not be aware of, you know, Paul Maurice likes to maybe get a practice in with that new group before putting him out into a game situation. So I'd expect it's going to be the same Jets team. I expect the Oilers, you know, probably a similar Oilers team, because to your point, Dave, there's not a lot that you can take from Thursday's game and say this was good or this was bad and we need to shuffle our lineup now. It was just a game that almost happened in a vacuum where both teams were struggling to generate anything because of the nature of the game and the scheduling around it.
Yeah, a few things there, Drew. I think you make a really good point about practice, because as we know, with the amount of games, like you've got some back-to-back games there, you've got a back-to-back game next weekend against Calgary, but because you have so few practice days, you really have to be smart with which days you choose. And I agree, especially with this stretch that they're in here with four games in 6 days, and obviously the back-to-back, against Montreal and Edmonton in there, I think that was the smart decision by Paul Maurice and the coaching staff to give the boys a day off. And I think, you know, you're probably not going to see changes. I agree with you there. Like, and, you know, Jansen Harkins is one of the players we're talking about here, because obviously we don't expect any type of major change. And then, you know, there's always, you know, Ville Heinola out there. But, you know, Paul Maurice talked about this. It was either 2 days ago or 3 days ago. Dave might know this better. But, you know, he talked about Ville Heinola, and he said one of the main reasons why he was called up to the taxi squad was because of the long road trip and the fact that when you're out on the road and you're in Alberta and BC, it's tougher to get a guy, to come from Winnipeg out there. So that was one of the main reasons. And it wasn't like he was saying, guys, that, you know, Ville Heinola isn't going to play, because he hinted that, you know, there is a chance that he might get into the lineup. So yeah, based on the game a couple nights ago, nobody should really expect a change. Doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but now there's no doubt, guys, that this is a tough part of the schedule. And, you know, not saying that the Jets can't pick up, you know, three or four wins here, but I mean, this is a chance to separate yourself from the Canucks and from the Flames. But yeah, going back to what you asked, you know, at the beginning of the show, Drew, you look at the macro level. I mean, the Jets are going to be a playoff team. I mean, barring a really big collapse, you're already past the midway point of the season, and the Jets are solidly in a playoff spot. Yes, you know, Calgary and Vancouver, are 3 and 4 points back respectively. But as Dave mentioned, the games in hand are really going to come into play here. So this is an opportunity, you know, with those three games against Calgary next week. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves because, of course, we've got, you know, Edmonton and Vancouver before that. But, you know, this is a really big stretch. And then, you know, in April, you're going to have more home games coming up, of course, because you've been on the road basically for the entire month of March. But there's no doubt, guys, that these games are going to be crucial in terms of teams like the Jets and the Oilers, you know, separating themselves from some of those teams that have, you know, crawled back into it. And sometimes I think, guys, that, you know, games in hand get overplayed a little bit because you still have to win those games and there's that uncertainty there. So you know, give Vancouver and Calgary credit. You know, we were talking about this a few weeks back, and those teams really looked out of it. Like, we were putting the nail in the coffin. Like, the nail was almost completely in the coffin. And those two teams have, you know, clawed back into it. So give them a lot of credit. I still think they're in tough to make the playoffs, because I do think, you know, the four teams that are in playoff spots right now are the four best teams. Like, at the beginning of the season, I liked Vancouver better than Edmonton. But the way McDavid is playing, I can't believe, you know, we're 15 minutes into the show here and we haven't talked more about McDavid, because I think what we're seeing is one of the best individual seasons. Like, we're talking Gretzky type of stuff here.
So let's talk about McDavid. I mean, we know he got the two goals on Thursday night, but, you know, the Jets, I think, for the most part, did a decent job of not letting him take over the game. That being said, you know, of course, he gets an opportunity and he scores two goals on it. That's, you know, to some extent, just an exceptional player being exceptional. But, you know, how do the Jets sort of neutralize him tonight? Of course, the caveat being, you know, the Oilers get last change, so the Jets can't or won't typically get their preferred matchup. So, I mean, I would like to think that if this game was in Winnipeg, Pierre-Luc Dubois would get that matchup assignment against Connor McDavid. But tonight, with the game being in Edmonton, I have to think that, you know, Oilers head coach Dave Tippett is going to do everything in his power to put McDavid up against one of Scheifele or, you know, we saw it on a couple different times, Nate Thompson in the Jets' fourth line, and it worked okay on Thursday night, but I'm sort of holding my breath if that would be, they'd see similar results tonight, Dave.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think, you know, Rick and a number of commentators have said how well Neil Pionk played, and I think the key was the Jets, when they faced the Oilers and were able to, relatively speaking, shut Connor McDavid down, was that it was a collective team effort. And you saw that commitment to defense. And you know, on Connor McDavid's goals, what did we see? We saw how many errors, you know? I mean, it's just how many errors were occurred before he scores that goal. And so it wasn't just one player who made a mistake. There were a number of players who made mistakes on Connor McDavid's, you know, opportunities. And he's too good. He's just too good a player to give that kind of that room to. And if he takes it, if you give it to him, he's going to take it and he's going to run with it and he scores goals. And to Ezzie's point, I mean, he's having one of the best individual seasons, especially given everything that's occurred, for him to be able to kind of go off the way he has and separate himself. It's pretty incredible. So, I mean, look, you're in a situation where you have to, you know, again, collectively shut the player down. And Neil Pionk maybe would, you know, seem to have a very good, battle with Connor McDavid, you know, a few games ago. Maybe you need to go back to that. I don't know. But, like, you know, I think what it comes down to is that this is a Jets team that cannot afford to just focus on, you got to focus on your game. I mean, again, Connor McDavid is going to get his opportunities and you have to try and shut him down, but you need to get this whole team going. And I think that's kind of the key. I think that's going to be the focus. That's probably what Paul Maurice is going to say. They're not skating till 12:30 Central. So right, the morning skate we won't be hearing from Paul Maurice till about 1:30, maybe 1:15. So that'll be on illegalcurve.com, just for those who are wanting to know what'll be happening after this broadcast.
Dave is a company man.
I am. But I just think, I think it's a function of, you just can't focus on the one player. You just have to continue to roll along and get your team going, because that's kind of the most important thing.
Right. And, you know, go ahead, Drew.
I was just going to say, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on our YouTube channel and all our social media feeds. So nice to see so many regulars and newcomers joining us for our weekly Winnipeg Jets discussion. A reminder, later tonight, after the game between the Oilers and the Jets, it is going to be the Illegal Curve post-game show. Be sure to hit the subscribe button on our YouTube channel. Smash that subscribe button. Smash that like button. Get alerted each and every time we go live here on YouTube. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzie. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Ezzie, I interrupted you. My apologies. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's all good, brother. You know, just continuing to the talk about Connor McDavid, because obviously we want to get back into the Jets here, boys. But, I mean, McDavid is on pace for 98 points. 1.75 points a game is what he's averaging right now. He's up to 58 points in 33 games. So he's going to come, like, we obviously don't know if he's going to hit 100. I would probably think that, you know, he will hit 100 just because he's so good, right? But just those numbers alone, 1.75 points a game, if he's able to hit 100 points in 56 games, like, we are going to be talking about this as one of the best individual seasons, certainly in the last, what, 15 years, 20 years. So just he's just a pleasure to watch. And I agree with Dave. It's kind of like that LeBron James theory. I was going to say, Drew, because I know, you know, out of the three of us, you're the biggest basketball fan, even though, you know, Dave M and I like to watch the odd Raptors game. But it's like LeBron James, right? Like LeBron James, you know, he's going to get what, minimum 25 points every single night. Like, you can't,
he's really going to get his share of points.
Exactly. And it's like Connor McDavid. Like, you almost have to assume he's going to get one goal every game, or he's going to get, you know, a goal and an assist every game because he's that good. But obviously, to Dave's point, you're not going to completely focus on him. And yeah, the pairing of Neil Pionk and Derek Forbort boys did a really good job, as they have all year, being that shutdown pair for the Jets. Like, there's no question in my mind, statistically and eye test, that they've been, you know, the Jets D pair, best D pair for the Jets. And yeah, I think it's going to be tough to get the Dubois, Connor, Ehlers line against the McDavid line. But, you know, if you're going up, you know, with Scheifele, Wheeler, and Paul Stastny, you know, they're obviously going to be up to the task, even though I think the Dubois line right now is the number one line. And I think that's something that we probably should be talking about more, that even though the ice time might not indicate that, that is the Jets top line. Based on, well, skill.
I mean, we're getting way ahead of ourselves here, but I mean, I have to believe that part of the reason why the Jets were happy to acquire Pierre-Luc Dubois in the Patrick Laine trade is what he did against Austin Matthews last year in the bubble. And the Jets know that they have to go through at least two, you know, to get out into the conference finals, you have to go through your division, which oftentimes could mean facing up against a Connor McDavid or, and then an Austin Matthews, in whatever order. I mean, who knows, of course, but that is why, I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois, that's why I would think Dave Tippett is going to avoid McDavid against Pierre-Luc Dubois as much as possible, because I think McDavid against any of the other Jets centers, particularly Scheifele, who's not great defensively, is an appealing matchup for the Oilers head coach. And that's, you know, where you're going to have to see sort of the quote-unquote five-man unit tonight, Dave, you know, do what they can against Connor McDavid to, if not shut him down completely, which would obviously be ideal, but is definitely easier said than done, limit him or minimize the impact so he's not able to completely take over the game that we've seen so many times.
Yeah, and I think that's when this comes down to coaching, right? I think that Paul Maurice, I mean, he gets paid to make decisions. And the point is that you're right, you don't have last change. So as a result, you have to figure out a way to, you know, work the chessboard in your favor, you know, and that's part of the appeal of coaching is, you know, clearly you're not gonna want to have a situation where you just throw out your line, you just toss your line, your first line goes there, second, like Dave Tippett, because Dave Tippett is a you can say whatever you want. He's got a head for the game, and he knows about that sort of, like, he's very good in terms of trying to, I mean, again, he might not have all the pieces that he likes in terms of setting it up, but the fact is, like, that's the one thing Paul Maurice has to do. I mean, he has to coach, and that's going to be, it's incumbent on him to work as best he can, given the unevenness of last change. And I think that's one of the things we're going to have to watch for tonight. And we'll talk about in the postgame show. How did the Paul Maurice do in terms of matching up against Dave Tippett? And that, look, it's a tall task, but you're a head coach of an NHL team, so it's your responsibility to do it. If you don't want the Scheifele line against the McDavid line, which you probably don't want, then you've got to figure out a way to get them off and not allow Dave Tippett to take advantage of those matchups. And right, even if it means changing up your game plan a little bit, you know what? So be it, because you clearly know that you'd rather have Dubois or Lowry matching up versus the Scheifele line.
Right. And as you mentioned, Dave M, that's not something that you can control. I mean, Paul Maurice and the coaching staff know that's the case. So Dave Tippett has the advantage there, just like, you know, Paul Maurice had the advantage over Dominic Ducharme in the two games against the Montreal Canadiens, right? And I'm really interested to see, you know, what this Dubois Connor Ehlers line does, you know, when they haven't had 2 hours of sleep and they played the previous night, right? Like, because in that game against the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, they were by far the best line. And obviously, you know, the damage was done on the power play with Connor sniping those two power play goals. But at 5-on-5, I think we've seen the maturation of that line. Like, you know, we talk about Nikolai Ehlers a lot, And I think he has been the Jets' best forward all year long. And that's nothing against, you know, Kyle Connor or nothing against, you know, Mark Scheifele, who's obviously leading the team in points. But, you know, Ehlers drives the offense, and it was nice to see, you know, him out there for the 3-on-3 overtime, because we were talking about that, you know, against the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, the game that Austin Matthews scored the game winner, and they had such a good game. And we were wondering why Dubois, Ehlers, and Connor weren't out there, right, Dave? So yeah. I'm really interested to see how that line does against, you know, McDavid's line, even though there's a good chance that Dubois' line won't match up against McDavid's line. But I mean, it's going to be really interesting, you know, because a couple of months ago, boys, when we were talking about this North Division, I mean, this is kind of exactly what we expected at this point in the season. And the next, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, especially with the trade deadline in there, I think are going to be absolutely fascinating, because you've got six teams that are still in it. And you can say whatever you want about the Canucks and Flames, but, you know, Daryl Sutter has had an impact. They've won 4 or 5 games since Daryl Sutter took over.
And they beat the Leafs last night.
They beat the Leafs last night. And obviously, you know, the Leafs were a little bit rusty with, you know, 4 days off between games. Or 5 days off between games. I don't know exactly what it was. It was one
of the
two.
Sunday. They lost. Yeah. I mean, the Leafs are struggling. We'll talk about that when we look at this week in the North Division a little bit later on in the program. But, you know, the Leafs, everyone said, you know, the loss to Winnipeg, okay, the Leafs are going to recalibrate themselves and come back after, you know, the 4 days off, because they lost to Ottawa on Sunday also. And then, look, they still lost to the Flames last night. They get the rematch tonight. But if you're in Toronto, I mean, I can assure you that the parade has been canceled temporarily, at least, and the panic button is getting pressed for those in Leafs Nation right now. And, you know, I don't think anybody's shedding any tears in any of the other Canadian markets over that fact.
Well, and Freddie Anderson didn't have a good night, right? It was, I think, 3 goals on the first 7 shots, and they obviously weren't all his fault. I'm trying to think of the one goal that was particularly weak. It might have been Chris Tanev's goal, I forget, but there was one goal that looked like, you know, Freddie Anderson should have for sure had that one. So, you know, Anderson isn't playing at the level that I think the Leafs want, but you're right, Drew. I mean, I think when you are up 9 points on the second place team, which was obviously the Jets, I think you almost start resting on your laurels a little bit, and now everybody else is caught up. So you're right. I still think the Leafs are the most talented team in this division. I don't necessarily, you know if they're going to be the team that gets to the West Final, which is weird to say because Toronto's obviously not in the western part of the country. Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going through that stretch. But I do think when this is all said and done, I do think, you know, I know people in the chat maybe won't like this, but I do think that the Leafs are going to end up at the top of this division.
If I think we're pretty much in agreement that it's unlikely that we're going to see any straight lineup changes for tonight's game between the Jets and the Oilers, is it maybe time to see some line juggling, at least? Maybe see some switching of players from line to line? You know, we know that the Dubois, Connor, Ehlers line is going, but, you know, is it maybe time to see a little bit of a swap somewhere among some of those players, Dave?
Yeah, well, I mean, again, to your point, Drew, I don't anticipate Ville Heinola or Jansen Harkins going in the lineup for tonight's game, and we'll know that better in about 4 hours. But the truth is that you could see some changes. You know, Matthew Perreault seems to be going, and maybe, you know, you get a guy like him, a little more energy guy, put him back up onto the third line, maybe move some guys around. I mean, maybe, again, everyone is so fixated on line numbers. And it's funny because Pascal Vincent always kind of gets a little upset when you say, well, Pascal, your first line is this. He goes, we don't have first lines. We just have four lines, you know, four lines that go out there, but it's not first, second, third, fourth. And we get so fixated on that people, you know, if you put a guy on the third line, who's a quote first line guy, the world is ending. But again, you know, could Paul Stastny be your third line center? Could Adam Lowry be your fourth line center? Yeah. You know, here's a crazy notion, you know, maybe play guys who are wingers as the wingers and play your centers as your centers. So, I'm not trying to malign Nate Thompson, because Nate Thompson had, as we talked about in the postgame show, his numbers were fine in the 7 minutes you played him, but you only played him for 7 minutes. And so to me, Paul Stastny's the center. He's been fine as a winger, but Paul Stastny's the center. Wouldn't he be a better third line center and then have Adam Lowry as your fourth line center? And then have, you know, maybe Matthew Perreault on that first line, or Andrew Copp, who's shown that he can benefit from there. And then have, you know, Stastny, Appleton, and Perreault as your or third line and have Kopp there and have, you know, it doesn't really make a difference, but I'm just saying that you can differentiate these things. And I think to the point you're making and you're asking me, Drew, is then at least you have more balance throughout the whole lineup, you know, and then you're not reliant on two lines to get the scoring and the other two to just kind of be holders. And I think when the third line was scoring and getting and putting up goals, you weren't seeing that so much, but they haven't been doing that as much of late. So to me, maybe a little bit of a line blundering wouldn't be a bad thing for the team. Now, the problem is that we never see it for a long time, right? And you want to see, like we talked about it a little while ago, you want to see that Dubois, Ehlers, Connor, see them build chemistry, get them some games together. But is it impossible to break up this lineup? Put like Wheeler on the third line. I know that's a crazy notion, but like it doesn't necessarily have to be the third line because you can play them however long you want. But I just think like you can change things up and give yourself your team a different look with some of the different players that can add some spark to your group.
There you go. Good soliloquy from Dave Manouk there. We're pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend from TSN, Sarah Orleski, joins us on the show. Sarah, good morning. Nice to see you. How are you doing?
Oh, good morning, guys. I don't know about this whole being on camera this early in the morning. I don't know how you three do it.
Well, because, I mean, we're, you know, we need you on the show, Sarah, to at least bring up the Q rating of the broadcast, because we have Ezzy, who looks like a hairy beast, you know, Dave Manouk with wearing a hat indoors, which is such a fashion faux pas, and the less said, the better about my appearance. So you at least, you know, help us make the show look better than it currently does.
No, I contemplate going with the look, like with the hat or even a toque. And then I thought a toque would really be inappropriate given the weather and the fact that I'm indoors. But I contemplated any options that I might have, sunglasses, a mask, you know.
It's all good. Sarah, obviously we appreciate your time. And, you know, the last time we spoke to you on the show, Patrick Laine got traded about 15 minutes after your departure from the program. So I can only assume that we're in for another blockbuster. Maybe this morning is when we're going to see David Savard or Matthias Ekholm or any of those rumored defensemen get traded to Winnipeg. It seems that would only be fitting with your appearance here this morning, right?
Well, if that's the case, then, you know, anytime that you guys feel leading up to a trade deadline or anything, I'm expecting to get an invitation. And everyone, that's the way that you could promote it from now on. You know she's coming on. You know a big trade is on its way.
Exactly. You know the rest of your Saturday is going to be ruined as a result because now you're going to be – now something's going to happen. Whatever plans you had, just shove them to the wayside because the trade is going to take place. Obviously, Sarah, brought you on to talk about the Jets that we were talking about the week that was. You know, they got the two wins going back to last Saturday's game in Toronto, the two losses to Edmonton and Montreal. You know, Thursday's game, I mean, you know, from our perspective, it was definitely a bit of a snoozer to be expected, maybe given both teams playing Wednesday and having to travel. I think tonight it's going to be almost a complete 180 from what we saw on Thursday. I'm expecting a lot more energy from both teams and frankly, a more entertaining hockey game.
Yeah, so am I. I think that it's understandable that what we saw on Thursday night, not only given the fact that the two had played the night before, but just how much hockey they've been playing. So I think you're going to have some of those games sometimes, but I'm with you. I expect this to look a lot more like what we've seen in previous meetings between these two teams, which have been obviously much higher scoring. You know, speaking with Ray Ferraro heading into the first intermission on Thursday night, because he was our intermission guest, and he was, both of us were talking, I mean, trying to pick out things to really key on, especially when you look at that first period. There wasn't a whole lot. A joke that we could almost take every shot that had from both teams in that first period and look back at them. So I'm expecting it to be much different this time around. And I think that we'll see a more entertaining hockey game, the ones that we're more used to seeing with these clubs.
You know, Sarah, I wanted to ask you about Pierre-Luc Dubois, Nick Ehlers, Kyle Connor. Before you came on, we were talking about that line, and it's probably going to be pretty tough for Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, you know, to get that matchup with the Oilers having the last change. But kind of what have you seen, you know, in the maturation? Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, the last game against the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, that line, it was, I think, the best line on the ice. So is that a line for you that you, I mean, I was calling it the first line, even though, you know, when Mark Scheifele is centering a line, you're just used to considering that the first line. But I guess what have you seen from that line? Obviously, you know, considering that, you know, Dubois had the 2 weeks off, and it just seems like they're finally getting into their groove and they're putting up the points that we expected.
Yeah, and I think that it's just, I mean, I look at that Montreal game as saying that it's one game, obviously, in which they'd combined for the 7 points. So you take it as being one game. I'm not expecting that sort of production from them all the time, but I just think that it shows that they're trending in the right direction and what the possibility is for a line like that. It's understandable that it was going to take a while for those three to find a rhythm and get some sort of chemistry going on. And I think it's still a work in progress for them. Paul Maurice has pointed out, you've got three different styles of players there and different skill sets with it that are trying to figure out how to best complement each other. And I think Pierre-Luc Dubois is trying to figure out what exactly he needs to do to be able to get Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers going. And with the lack of practice time that exists this year, and that's one of the reasons why I think that we'll see trades, or I wouldn't be surprised if we saw trades across the league, especially in the North Division, happening sooner rather than later, because with the quarantine, with lack of practice time, you want to get them integrated into new players, integrated into your team as soon as possible. But I think that there's a lot of potential there. I think that the comfort level will just continue to grow, not only for those three, but just in Dubois in the system as a Winnipeg Jet. And you think everything that he's gone through over the last year, both personally and then just, I mean, with a general lack of hockey and just getting back into it, that I think that there's so much potential that exists in that top six. And I think that it gives Paul Maurice a number of different options to be able to. And I think when I came on, I heard Dave talk about how he'd like to see maybe some movement in lines at various points. And I think when you look at the depth that Winnipeg has up front, Paul Maurice has a number of options in how he wants to, even if it's just for a section of a period or something to change things up. And Pierre-Luc Dubois, though, with Kyle Connor and Nikolaj Ehlers, I think that we got a taste of the potential of that line when they do get going.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media feeds. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Our guest is TSN Jets reporter Sarah Orleski.
You know, Sarah, one of the things that Paul Maurice has at his disposal is a taxi squad. And, you know, we thought this year being a condensed season that he would use that to his avail. And, you know, previously it wasn't super taxing, no pun intended, on his team in terms of player usage. And he didn't really need to because they had some nice spreading out of the games. But now with March, you know, the 17 games in 31 days, we know it's a more condensed schedule. And I thought it was interesting, his comments this week, talking about when he was asked about fresh legs, you know, getting a Jansen Harkins, a Ville Heinola into the lineup. He said it was more for insurance than for fresh legs. So do you think that he's going to be more inclined to use these guys, or do you think he'll wait for an injury to really occur before, you know, he gets a Jansen Harkins or a Ville Heinola into his lineup?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it took. I mean, based on even just Paul's approach in previous seasons as well. Obviously, I appreciate that this is completely different than what we've had to deal with before and what we've seen, but just think that this team by and large is, and I'm not a analytics aside, because I appreciate that some of the numbers that people look at don't always, you know, trend in favor of Winnipeg, but they are getting wins and they are doing well right now. And so I think that he is reluctant maybe to change something, because why? Like, you look at the game against Edmonton. I don't look at it, the game on Thursday night, and say, okay, well, you have to bring in a bunch of fresh legs now for Saturday's game here, because I look at it as being one-off. It's different if you're seeing a trend with it, but I think that he knows what he has. You try to get some consistency going with your lines, and inevitably, I would be shocked if we don't see some of those taxi squad players move into the lineup at some point, because I think that injuries are inevitable. Just with this schedule, with what we've seen in the past, for it. You think about how many have been very fortunate this year when you look by and large at the net, at how few significant injuries they've had, because that hasn't been the case recently. You think of how many defensemen they've had to go in recent seasons because of all of the injuries. So they've been able to keep guys in the lineup, keep them healthy enough. And I do think that at least for the time being, I would be surprised if we saw him mix it up. He likes what he sees up front. He's spoken very highly about, you know, his ability to run that bench with that fourth line the way that it is. And nothing against Jansen Harkins, because you know from everything that Paul Maurice has said over the last year about him, he's a big Jansen Harkins fan. But again, to mix something up for the sake of mixing something up, I don't know if we're going to see that.
Sarah Orleski is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all our social media platforms. You know, Sarah, you know, going back when the Dubois for Laine trade happened, you know, we all thought that, you know, the options of the Jets going up the middle with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry, that would be sort of the most appealing use of a guy like Dubois and a guy like Stastny. We haven't seen that yet. We've seen Dubois on the wing. We've seen Stastny on the wing. Is that, in your estimation, the, maybe for lack of a better term, the nuclear option for Paul Maurice to use, you know, when, if this team is struggling, they haven't struggled yet? Or do you think that's maybe the ace in the hole that he's waiting to use come playoff time, or come when the games matter a little bit more than they might right now, sort of in the heart of the season?
Well, I don't think it has to be one or the other. Again, it goes back to the depth that he has, the options that exist. I think that Paul Stastny, to put him, let's say, on the fourth line, or entering that fourth line, well, is he more beneficial to you as a team if he's playing up in the top six right now or playing more than 10 minutes? Yeah, with the way that he's playing, he is. I think the past great season so far this year. And I don't think that necessarily you need to move things around. That fourth line, to me, has a role right now, and one that Paul Maurice is very comfortable with the way that they're executing it. And to be able to keep Paul up in that top six, or to be able, I don't think moving Adam Lowry down farther in the lineup either. I think, but people, I often hear or see people suggest to me on Twitter about how they think that, you know, if you put Adam Lowry down as your fourth line center, think about how great that would be. Well, in theory, because he's not a fourth line center. I think that he adds so much more to this. And you look at the way that line, whoever has been with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry the years, the way that Paul has utilized them. I mean, so often he still uses them for marquee matchups. He often rolled them second the bend. And so I think that keeping Stastny up there right now, although I wouldn't be surprised if we see it move around a little bit, maybe bring a little bit more speed up that Lane Wheeler line at some point. For right now, what Paul is able to do up there and the options that it gives the Jets in terms of everything from faceoffs, just defensive responsibilities, the way that they're able to do it, I think that it just, right now, it works, in my opinion, the way that it is. But it's great for Maurice and the coaching staff to be able to have, again, that option. Because if you manipulated those 12 forwards around, you just have endless options depending on what you need. And though we haven't seen it to the same extent this year, we know that Paul in previous seasons hasn't been shy about, you know, the blender out again. I mean, how many times have we seen that where people comment on it? So if he needs to adjust within the game, he can, but I think it just gives him, as I said, it gives him a number of different options, a number of different looks, depending on the type of team that they're playing, the type of matchup, whether or not he's at last change. But I think that they do like to have a little bit of consistency, and we've seen more of it with his line so far.
Sarah, I wanted to go back to the trade deadline. I wasn't on the Zoom call with Chevy, but I heard your question and you asked Chevy about the quarantine. And obviously, you know, that's what everybody is talking about in relation to the Canadian teams. And I think you'd agree Chevy, you know, downplayed it a little bit, but mm-hmm. you know, that's to be expected because, you know, we know that Chevy's only going to make a move, you know, that makes his team better. And if it so happens that it's, you know, 2.5 weeks before the trade deadline, as opposed to, you know, 1 or 2 days before the trade deadline, then he's going to have to make that move. But when you look at, you know, the next 3 weeks leading up to the trade deadline, I mean, I think everyone kind of agrees that, you know, the Jets could be in the market for a top four defenseman or a defenseman in general. Is there a chance that you know, we could see more moves? You know, I think back to, you know, a couple of years ago, and I think it was 6 or 7 moves that the Jets made, of course, with, you know, Kevin Hayes being the, you know, the big move. But do you think there's a chance that, you know, we could see 2 or 3 moves? Because it seems to me like, you know, everyone's fixated on, you know, a Matthias Ekholm or a David Savard, but knowing yeah. Chevy, he's been more active in previous years at the trade deadline.
He has better read than this year. And I think that, I mean, the quarantine does have so much to do with it, because if you're looking in previous years, I mean, obviously you didn't have to worry about that, but I also had that sense that you had because of that. Obviously had more trading partners. So if you're looking to avoid the quarantine, then you're trading within the North Division. Well, I mean, I don't know to what extent that's going to happen this year. I think that'll be fascinating to see. And I think it's interesting. Kevin did downplay the idea that he needed to get a trade going sooner, preferably rather than closer to the deadline because of quarantine. And I think that that's the way that most general managers would approach it. Kyle Dubas came out and said that, you know, yes, he's looking to get a trade going, which I appreciate, because not to say that, you know, that you wouldn't take a trade right at April 12th, but I think it makes sense. I'm obviously no general manager, but it just, with the quarantine, why wouldn't you? Especially because I think that Pierre-Luc Dubois has been almost that cautionary tale of what can happen, right? That you have your quarantine, and then if you're at this point in the season and you were to take 2 weeks off from skating and then come back in, I mean, that chance of injury or something like that, I just think is that much more significant to get back up to speed. So it would be a concern. But I think that this will be a quiet deadline, and compared to what we've seen in the past, which is not what anyone would want to hear, certainly at TSN. Because I mean, poor James Duffy, thank goodness that he's the best in the business at trying to host the panels, because I don't know how much we're going to see this year north of the border because of that. I think that, yeah, I do think that maybe if you see, whether it be waiver pickups or something like that, perhaps, but I don't anticipate there being as much. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe this will be, I'll be on the next and it'll be one of the busiest days. And we can only hope because of the content that would provide us. But I think unless we see that this quarantine gets changed, I would just be surprised, especially because with so many teams, I mean, when you're playing the same team, you're playing within your division every game. Well, you look back and go, okay, well, you know, in theory, you know, where Vancouver is in the standings. Okay, but if Vancouver's got 6 games left against and the teams in front of them, and then you look and go, okay, well, what if they got the 6 games? I mean, it's just, so do you really want to trade within your own division as well? I think that this is such a unique year, and I think it'll be so fascinating when the season is over to be able to go back and look at everything that happened this year and in all the different areas and how things played out.
Well, I don't think any one of us are going to bet against you, Sarah. Somebody in the chat called you Sarah Oracle. So I think most likely you're going to be right about the trade deadline, and it's going to be quiet.
Well, like I said, that's certainly nobody at my place, and well, nobody in the media wants to see that it's going to be quiet, because that it makes for an incredibly long day when it is. But yeah, I would be surprised, but I have, as my husband will tell you, I've been wrong about many, many people. So perhaps it will be with this one as well.
You know, Sarah, what have you thought of the baseball-style schedule? You know, it's one thing. We know that the North Division, the NHL, Big Area Bettman's already on record as saying he doesn't really want that for next season. But what are your thoughts about keeping this sort of schedule where you would see Edmonton twice or you'd see Montreal twice in a row, as opposed to what we've become, you know, used to, which is you see it's a one and done and then you move on to the next team.
Well, I like elements of it. I'd like to see it degraded. I mean, as much as I have enjoyed seeing the Canadian teams more often, and I think that that in, for me, if there was a perfect schedule, we would be seeing Eastern teams in particular more mm-hmm. often than just coming through town once a season. But I like the idea of it, especially because can you imagine if there are fans in the arena mm-hmm. when they're back, if you were able to have two consecutive games against the Leafs in town, or just the atmosphere that would continue to build with it, especially with Canadian teams or just teams that are, either you have a rivalry with or just have even some marquee players, the excitement that happens in the city when Pittsburgh comes through town because of the players or Washington, and to be able to have fans in and the excitement. I've missed fans so much this season, and because there's no replacement for that atmosphere, just the rush that you get. For me as a broadcaster, when we're about to go live with that arena is filled just before warm-up and just the energy, it's you can't replicate that. As much as all the arenas have done a good job of trying, you just can't. So I'd love to see a little bit of that more, and I'd love to see more Canadian matchups throughout the upcoming schedules. But obviously we're seeing, you think about some of the teams that are in even just the typical central division right now and the way that they've been playing. I would love to be able to see those games and see Chicago or whoever in for a couple. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
It's got to be a particularly lonely experience being in the arena, especially this coming Wednesday night with that 9:30 puck drop, and you're sitting there at midnight just, you know, watching the clock tick by.
Her and Fred. Be quite, hey, don't, she's with Fred. Fred's there at the league.
Yeah, don't forget
true.
About Fred.
It's
Freddie.
True.
That's true.
Give Freddie a shout out.
Yeah.
Freddie
is the best.
He is, but there's a lot of coffee consumption. It's heavy. I mean, I don't usually drink coffee at 10:30 at night, but I've been known to during some of these Western games. It is, especially in that, you know, so my desk is up right now in the Bud Lounge, and which is great for our home games, the vantage point for it, everything. But on road games, because there are so few of us in there, and even our crew is scaled down so much that I can hear Dennis and Kevin, I can hear them call the game from up in their booth from where I'm sitting. I don't actually need to have my earpieces in because it's that quiet, and it does. So it's funny because if you hear someone, sometimes there's been someone from housekeeping or maintenance that maybe is working on something, and it's eerie because you can hear it's almost like you can hear the pin drop for it or someone shuffle stuff, and you look around, who's in this arena right now? There's only supposed to be three of us. What's going on? So yeah, it is. But the driving into the rink when, especially in last month when it was darker out, still earlier, when you're driving going, Oh, okay. It's 7 o'clock and we still have 2 hours to go. And there's just, yeah, it makes for some long times. Happy, love that we're back being able to do it, but it's certainly, yeah, late nights. I like to go to sleep early,
yeah.
Guys. I often struggle on West Coast in a season to be able to stay up through the end of the third period. So trying to stay up and kind of look engaged during some of it can be a bit of a challenge.
Well, you pulled it off for this interview, so we have no doubt that you'll be able to pull it off again Monday and Wednesday with the later games. There you go, Mama Bear with the coffee cup. Yeah,
I was gonna say, Sarah, too, the fans will be back soon. We got the Bombers coming up, and you know, and everyone's gonna be vaccinated pretty soon, so the fans will be back, that arena won't be so eerie, but we can only imagine what it's like. But we're watching, all the viewers are with you at home, so just take solace in the fact that everybody's watching.
We're all in this together. Get your coffees ready. It's going to be a late one this coming week, but it should be a great week of hockey ahead of us.
it all starts tonight with the Jets and the Oilers, the rematch, and then, of course, Monday and Wednesday in Vancouver. Sarah Orleski will be hosting the broadcast with our friends at TSN. Sarah, appreciate it this morning. We'll let you get on with your Saturday. Thanks so much.
Always appreciate it, guys.
Take care. There she goes. Sarah Orleski. Thanks, Sarah. Joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's stretch your legs. Take a break for a couple minutes. Got to pay some bills. We'll be right back with more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile!
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard!
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. That's a long time by my count. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Whatever you need, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out. Curbside, delivery, pickup in store, whatever you like, be sure to check them out, bernsteinsdeli.com. Our Illegal Curve question of the day, we want to hear from you on this topic. Those of you in the chat room can certainly chime in on this as well. The Winnipeg Jets, gentlemen, have only 5 goals from defensemen this season, the fewest in the entire NHL. Do the Jets need more offense from their defensemen, and should this factor into Kevin Cheveldayoff's trade deadline approach? The reason I bring up that question now is because, of course, Chevy met with the media earlier this week, talk about the trade deadline. We referenced that in our conversation with Sarah moments ago. So from your perspective, is this something that should be factoring in to Kevin Cheveldayoff's plans moving forward during this trade deadline season?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, just before we get into that, thanks so much to Sarah for coming on. She's just awesome, and we love every time we have her on. We talked about it before. I mean, we just... Oh, you increased the font there, Drew. It threw me off a little bit. That's okay. with those comments. And for North End Rick, I'm drinking a 7-Eleven French vanilla cappuccino. He was wondering what I had in my coffee cup there, even though he wouldn't be surprised if there's a little whiskey in there. But you look at what's happening here, you know, with the Jets, and they're obviously, you know, at the top of the division. And I really don't think much has changed, guys, over the last few weeks. Like, I think the Jets need for a top four defenseman, probably even before the season started, was a need. Like, nothing against Derek Forbort. Like, I really like Derek Forbort, and we all agree that Forbort and Pionk, you know, the Duluth connection there has been a great pair for the Jets, the most consistent pair all year long. But if you have the ability to bring in Matthias Ekholm, you're going to do that. And, you know, that pushes, you know, Derek Forbort down, most likely to play with Tucker Pullman there on your third pair. So, I mean, I still think that's the biggest need. Now, if you can add something else, yeah, you go ahead and you do it. Like, you know, a player I was thinking about, you know, who might be available is like a Luke Glendening. Maybe like a guy that you could play on the fourth line, you know, someone like that. I don't think, you know, the Jets are going to go after, you know, Rickard Rakell's names out there, guys, or like a, you know, a Mikael Granlund on Nashville. Like, the Jets don't have any lack of talent and skill in their top nine forwards. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned the five goals from defensemen. I mean, yeah, that's low for sure. And you'd expect, you know, Morrissey to have a few more goals, and you'd expect, you know, maybe, you know, Tucker Pullman to have some more points, but, you know, this isn't the defense from 2 years ago when you had Buff and you had Tyler Myers and you had Jacob Trouba. The X factor that Dave talks about is Ville Heinola. And that is something that I think is going to be very interesting to see what happens there. Because is Ville Heinola, guys, just going to be up with the taxi squad on this road trip and then he gets sent back down to the Moose? Because as Dave M has talked about for months, if not years, is that Ville Heinola at his age has to be playing in games, whether it's with the Moose or with the Jets. Yeah, sure, if he's up with the taxi squad and he misses the first two or three games of a road trip, fine. But ideally, you'd like to see him get into some games here. And the point I'm trying to make is Ville Heinola could be that guy that possibly plays in your top four and gives you more of an offensive element, right, Dave? Because, you know, he's been playing on the power play for the Moose. We know he has that puck-moving ability. He's got great vision, you know, good setup guy. So I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, the Jets won't make a move because, you know, they have an in-house solution in Ville Heinola, but they kind of do, guys, because, you know, you do have, you know, that ace in the hole here where, you know, you can bring in Ville Heinola and he makes you more dangerous from the back end in terms of offense. But I still do think Chevy is going to acquire a defenseman. Is it going to be Matthias Ekholm? Is it going to be David Savard? We don't know, but I would have no problem with either of those two guys.
Let me stop you right there. And Dave, I want you in on this one. You know, you talk about Ekholm and you talk about Savard. Ekholm certainly brings the offensive upside that David Savard doesn't. Savard is, I'm going to say, more akin to a Dylan DeMello.
He's a physical shutdown defenseman.
That's right. There's no offensive upside.
He's big. I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize how big of a boy David Savard is. He's a heavy player.
He's a heavy player. He keeps the high danger area of the ice clean, which is certainly an area that the Jets could stand to improve in, but he's certainly not going to bring you any offense from the back end. My question then for you, Dave, is does that make Ekholm more attractive to the Winnipeg Jets because of the offensive upside that he possesses that Savard doesn't? Or do you think the Jets, even though they only have those five goals from their defensemen this season, do you think that's still sufficient given the offense that they get from their forward group?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question about it. I think the fact is, if to answer your question, Drew, I think Ekholm is the number one target for a number of teams. I think there's a reason why he's the number one player on the TSN trade bait board, right? Because he is that player that can provide you offense. He's good defensively. So you've got the quote total package, and he signed for $3.75 million for next year as well. So, I mean, he creates a concern or a question, I should say, for Kevin Cheveldayoff, because what do you do in terms of the expansion? But for a win now team like the Winnipeg Jets, and again, Blake Wheeler is what Blake Wheeler is, right? You know, he's in a win now mode. He's in a win now mode for the last 5 years. Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Kyle Connor, these guys are in their peak. Connor Hellebuck, peak. So, you know, look, the defensive core, and we've talked about the Jets' defensive prospects that they have with the Manitoba Moose. There's five of them, and they're young and they're good. Heinola is obviously kind of the lead dog, but you've got Dylan Sandberg. You've got other young guys who are developing within that system, looking to come up. But I don't know that you have the luxury of time, which is what those players need. We saw it with Logan Stanley. Again, how many people asked me, is Logan Stanley a bust? And I said, no, Logan Stanley's not a bust. Defensemen take longer. You know, he might even take longer than most defensemen. And again, I'm not going to pretend like I'm Nostradamus and I knew he was going to be able to do what he's done, because
you love using that Nostradamus line.
I do. It's usually Nostrazzi, but I.
Well, no. It's usually Nostradamus and Nostradumbass. That's usually how it works.
That's true. But anyway, so the point is that Logan Stanley did what he did, and I just think you don't have the luxury of time with this Jets group to try and let those guys, like, you don't want to rush a Dylan Sandberg. Dylan Sandberg is where Dylan Sandberg needs to be. You know, Johnny Kovacevic is where Johnny Kovacevic, Leon Gavanke is where he needs to be. So those guys need to be with the Manitoba Moose, because again, if they make a mistake, Pascal Vincent isn't saying you're benched and you're not playing for the remainder of the game. So they can afford to make an error that leads to a goal in an AHL game and not face repercussions as a result. And so where the stakes are so much higher in the NHL, you don't want to have players worrying about that. You don't want them thinking. You want it to be second nature. So to me, you don't necessarily have that luxury of time, though, to allow for those defensive prospects to get to that maturity level, because at that point, your forwards start to age out. And so that's the conundrum. So that's why I think from a Jets perspective, and look, you're going to have to pay a price. You're not getting Matthias Ekholm for a first-round pick and Sammy Niku. I know people love, look, we're Winnipeggers and we love to get a good deal.
We love a bargain,
but that's just not happening. You're not going to trade for Ekholm. I mean, there's too many buyers out there. You know, it sounds like right now from what, you know, the insiders are saying, there's a lot of buyers for a Matthias Ekholm. Can you get a David Savard who, you know, is apparently extremely close with Pierre-Luc Dubois? I mean, how good would that be in terms of fit, right? I mean, you make a guy like Pierre-Luc Dubois even more comfortable in the city. You get a guy like David Savard who's going to come in and be comfortable in that setting as well. So to me, that could be a good fit. Now, again, I don't know that with the Jets' dynamic offense, you're super concerned about getting that production. You don't, to Ezzie's point, you don't have a Byfuglien, you don't have a Trouba, you don't have a Myers. These guys aren't the same players. But the fact is, you knew that. You knew that you don't have those players anymore. You have to adjust. You can't lament the fact that, oh, we don't have those guys anymore.
But you have Ville Heinola, and I see in the chat, like, there's a lot of people that want to see, you know, Heinola as early as tonight. And I said this, boys, on the post-game show. Like, I do think there's a really good chance. I shouldn't say really good. I think there is a decent chance, let's say that you see him on the road trip simply because you have that back-to-back situation against Calgary. And as Drew mentioned, depending on what happens here, like, if the Jets lose a couple of games in a row, you know, that changes things, right? Because maybe, you know, against the Vancouver Canucks, which we know are a terrible defensive team. I don't know if you guys have been watching them, even though they've been winning, they're still not a very good defensive team.
The only reason they've been winning is Thatcher Demko has been absolutely unbelievable.
He's been incredible. There's no doubt. But this is a team that's, you know, offense first. There's no doubt. And obviously defense last. So, you know, if the Jets lose a couple games, you know, do you see Ville Heinola go into the lineup to give them a little bit more of a puck moving element? Because obviously, you know, Logan Stanley has done an admirable job and he's been, you know, getting up in the play. We talked about that. He has that big shot from the point, but everybody's going to, you know, agree that Ville Heinola is more skilled and adds more of an offensive element, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, I do think the trade deadline and what the Jets do and Ville Heinola are mutually exclusive. I think, you know, there's a lot of people that think, you know, maybe the Jets should give Ville Heinola like a 4 or 5 game audition and that might change what Chevy does. I don't think that's the case. And you guys might disagree, but I think that, you know, Chevy is going to make his move, and it's cliche, but he's going to make a move if it makes his defense better. And Matthias Ekholm makes the defense better. David Savard or, you know, another guy that's out there, boys, on the trade bait board is Alex Goligoski. Like, that would be an upgrade over what the Jets currently have. But I still think Ville Heinola can get into some games and be a part of this team, even if the Jets do bring in a defenseman. So I just wanted to get that in there. You know, it's tough to predict what will happen. We mentioned this during the first hour of the show. The main reason why Ville Heinola was called up to the taxi squad was because of travel and the fact that it's harder, as Dave knows, to get a defenseman, you know, out on the road. So that's the main reason. It wasn't necessarily to get him into some NHL games, but we'll see what happens here. There's 6 more games on this road trip, including 3 against Calgary with a back-to-back, and, you know, Ville might get into a game here.
Well, to your point there, Ezzie, Heinola is likely there for insurance for injury, because we know that it would be, you know, the only other defenseman that the Jets had on the taxi squad prior to calling him back up were Sammy Niku and Nelson Noje, and those are two guys that, you know,
Niku's technically on the roster.
Pardon me, that's what I meant.
He's not, I know, but I'm saying, like, technically.
Right, technically. And you know that Paul Maurice doesn't want to have to use those guys. I think that's clear at this point in time, that should there be an injury, Maurice seems to be leaning towards using one of the guys that are down with the Moose rather than a Niku or who has played intermittently all year, or Noje, who's on the taxi squad and hasn't played at all this season. And I'd be shocked if you ever see him in the Jets lineup at this point in time.
Yeah, he's not going to Noje next. He would go either to Niku or Heinola, I would imagine. I mean, that to me is an interesting one. I think it depends on who goes down, obviously, but it's hard to say which he would prefer to use, obviously.
So let me ask you, Dave. I mean, obviously, we all listened to Kevin Cheveldayoff, and we all listened to his press conference on Monday, sort of the halfway mark of the season, talking about what the Jets have been so far this year. And I thought, Chevy is a guy who certainly keeps his cards close to his vest and doesn't say more than is necessary. I thought he was a little more open than usual this, on Monday when he spoke. What was your takeaway from Cheveldayoff's comments, particularly, as it related to the expansion draft and the trade deadline and things of that nature, Dave?
Well, I mean, I thought he was a little less guarded. I think that to your point, I think that was one of the things that you kind of had to take away from it, is that Kevin Cheveldayoff is a master of saying a lot and sometimes saying nothing and using a lot of words. And you're thinking to yourself, what did I just listen to exactly? Because he didn't really tell you anything he just said a lot, but he didn't tell you anything.
That's similar to us usually,
Yeah, oftentimes. That's true. Yeah. We circle around a little bit, but that's why we are fast friends with Kevin Cheveldayoff. I'm joking, of course, but I think it's a function of, again, I think he's a guy who's aware of the situation. He's not ignorant of the fact of what his team needs, and he's not going to, sell his team through the media to tell, oh, well, I need a better defenseman because our defense stinks. He's not going to say that. I mean, he may be thinking it, but he's never going to say it. So I thought he was a little more candid than we've come to expect. I thought his answers were a little more forthright. And again, like I said, it wasn't insightful in the sense that there wasn't anything groundbreaking. I mean, people asked about Brian Little, and because there were some rumors about Brian Little, and all Kevin Cheveldayoff said was there was no update. He's still in Ontario right now. But other than that, like I said, I just got the impression of a guy who isn't afraid to make a move if he has to. I mean, and I think he's aware of the limitations of the current situation. I think he knows that it's not ideal to make a trade at the trade deadline. I mean, we talked about that when James Duthie, so long ago, we said it's probably from a Canadian perspective, unless things change from the federal government's viewpoint and they make changes to the rules. The Canadian teams, and we heard it from Kyle Dubas. I mean, Kyle Dubas was even more direct than Kevin Cheveldayoff. He said, yes, I want to make a trade now. I don't want to wait a month. So I think that's one of the things that you're seeing from these guys. And you must, again, these guys are kicking tires all the time. So it's not as if, and we saw Larry Simmons, and I don't remember who the other Jets scout was that was in Columbus, obviously watching David Savard. And the reality is these guys would have watched Savard anyways when they were scouting Dubois. So it's not as if somehow they're it's a new thing. I mean, the reality is when you send a scout to a team, you don't say you're only scouting one player. You're obviously keying in on one, but you're keeping your eyes on a few. So when you're sending the assistant general manager to Columbus to watch a game, well, maybe there's a reason for that. And so I suspect that to Ezzie's point, that you're going to see a Kevin Cheveldayoff who's going to make a move if the move is there to be made. I would anticipate them making a move for a defenseman. I don't think that they're going to make a forward selection, because to Ezzie's point, they've got those options on the farm. You've got Christian Vesalainen. You've got David Gustafsson. I watch those guys. Gustafsson can play in the NHL. He's a phenomenal for a 20-year-old guy. And there's still look, I don't think it's a bad thing that he's doing what he's doing in the NHL. But I think if you need him, you could get him to play on that fourth line 7 minutes. He would never look bad in that situation.
Yeah, if the Jets are going to be acquiring, just wanted to say quickly, Drew, if the Jets do acquire a forward, it's most likely going to be for depth purposes. And I realize that, that's not sexy for fans to hear, but the Jets don't have a need. They have a top five offense in the league, so that's not what they need. They need a defenseman. They need maybe a little bit of depth. We know that, when it comes to playoff time, and you have some players that you can plug into the lineup with injuries, that's always a good thing. So I would probably, if I had to guess, I would say that, Chevy makes, two or three moves tops leading up to the trade deadline. And just wanted to mention, guys, in the 20 plus minutes that Chevy spoke, you know, he mentioned, you know, money in, money out. He mentioned LTI, long-term injury reserve, several times. I thought I was, you know, back in first year university at University of Winnipeg taking microeconomics. You know, he was talking about supply and demand. And
how were your grades in that class?
I did actually pretty well in that class. Oh, right, not in some other ones, but I'll show you my transcript later, Drew. But
you know, you could get that many F's on one piece of paper.
Yeah, exactly. No, but you know, it shows you what's happening with all of these teams up against the salary cap, and obviously Chevy also mentioned the flat cap, which we know is a huge impediment here for a lot of teams. But I wouldn't for that reason, I wouldn't expect a lot of GMs, quarantine rules aside, you know, to make moves that, you know, have a lot of cap ramifications, right? Like we talked about it with Mattias Ekholm, you know, that salary is very manageable, not just this year, but next year as well. And when you're talking about David Savard, he's obviously only got, you know, 1 year left on his contract. So yeah, you might have to move some salary out, but that's not going to be difficult. It's not like we're talking about huge tickets here for these types of defensemen. So
no. And I saw some people earlier in the chats, you know, talking about Erik Karlsson or something like that. One, I mean, Erik Karlsson has been
there's a 0% chance that happens.
Right. He's been a shell of himself.
Plus, who are you even moving out to make way for that contract?
More importantly, exactly. It's $11 million, right? I mean, you're not.
Well, that's my point.
You just don't have the room for it.
No, it's not. It's not an option. You're talking about Savard. You know, the Jets have the room. I mean, you know, they still have some space with the Brian Little LTIR status that they can, you know, for a 1 year guy, or, you know, even, you know, for this year, they'll have enough room to acquire a guy, maybe a guy, and then another, you know, very inexpensive option. They're going to have a few million dollars to play with under the salary cap, you know, right around trade deadline time, because they're not using the full capacity of Brian Little's LTIR right now. So they'll have a little bit of money to play with. But I found it very interesting, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments in the press conference. Let me read it verbatim. I have it up here on my second screen. Sometimes the improvements are internal, whether it's a young player getting an opportunity to play with the Moose right now, coming in and getting an opportunity to play with us and see what that does. Those are things that are certainly in our minds. So, you know, to your point, Dave, you know, the Jets do have talent with the Moose that is really getting ready to knock on the door if they're not already knocking on the door. Heinola, Gustafsson, I mean, you know, probably on a step down a little bit, Sandberg and Vesalainen, because I don't think those guys are necessarily right there for this season. But I found it interesting that Chevy, you know, sort of addressed that, you know, a little bit with his comments there, saying that, you know, don't necessarily expect the additions to come from outside the organization. They might be internal additions coming up from the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on Sandberg. I would disagree on Vesalainen. I think Vesalainen has made big strides in his game this season.
Let me rephrase. I think he could be ready. I don't know that Paul Maurice trusts him enough to put him into the lineup.
Sure. I mean, that's okay. That's a good qualification. I would suggest that, you know, Christian Vesalainen has made big strides in his game this season from what we saw last year. And I think, again, Vesalainen and Gustafsson, two guys who I think are, now again, it all depends. You don't want Christian Vesalainen going and playing 7 minutes a game. I think that's a complete waste of his talent. And we've talked about it. Do you want to have a top three lines that can score? And if you do, Christian Vesalainen provides you with a little, he's a big boy, you know, and he can score. He can shoot the puck. And you saw elements in his game that weren't there before, right? A guy who's willing to go in the corners and fight for that puck. Again, not to the same level as a David Gustafsson. I mean, David Gustafsson to me, and again, I'm trying not to gush, but I really think he is a...
Gustafsson?
Exactly.
I was waiting for you to do that one there, Ezzy.
No, but I mean, look, he's not going to come in and score 50 goals for the Winnipeg Jets. His offensive game has improved. You know, we saw it, what he was doing in Sweden, and his ability to gain the zone is pretty impressive. He's just such a formidable, strong guy that I think that's one of those elements that when you have a young player, you don't necessarily, that's one of the things that's always a knock. He has to grow into his body. This guy's already a man at 20. And I think that's probably will serve him well if called upon to play in the NHL. So yeah, there's definitely internal options. And you got Logan Stanley. Logan Stanley has, look, I mean, again, talk about a bizarro world. If you would have told me, guys, that folks in Jets land were clamoring for Logan Stanley to get into this Jets lineup, I wouldn't believe you for all the money in the world. Like, it just, there's no chance, no world did I ever believe that folks would be clamoring for Logan Stanley. And again, that's, I say that as someone who watched every Logan Stanley game that he's played as a pro hockey player, almost every game. So, you know, again, I think there are internal options that this team can use, you know, and I think that's one of the things that Kevin Cheveldayoff is saying. But I mean, I'd be surprised if at minimum they don't acquire David Savard. I don't know that he's going to go quote big game hunting and get a Matthias Ekholm and have to come deal with that sort of ramifications of the draft from Seattle and the expansion draft and what they're going to have to do. But I think that I would think at a minimum, he's going to get a player like David Savard. It makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah. And you know, our friend Rob Somerville, made this point, and I agree, you know, at times there is that physical presence, you know, lacking on the back end, even though like a guy like Neil Pionk has an underrated physical game. We talked about that with Weber, 3 weeks back, like for a smaller kind of offensive minded player, you know, Pionk has that physical element. And obviously, you know, Tucker Poolman is a guy that can throw his weight around. Logan Stanley is a guy that can throw his weight around, but I agree, Dave. And to be honest with you, I don't think that there's that much of a difference. Like when you're talking Matthias Ekholm versus David Savard, I don't think like one of them, I don't think Ekholm is big game and then David Savard isn't. Like you're talking about top four defensemen. David Savard is in the top four of Columbus. Like he's a top four defenseman. He's not a third pairing defenseman. Mm-hmm. So I think both of those players are in the same category. I'm just saying, Dave, in terms of, you know, what they can offer, they can play in your top four. Yes, Matthias Ekholm, you know, has a little bit of an offensive game, but a couple of years ago, I think Savard had, I want to say close to 10 goals, like 8 or 9 goals. And I know that he's earlier in his career, he had something like, I don't know what exactly, I'd have to look it up, but 11 or 12 goals. So, I mean, David Savard isn't, he had no goals last year, all year. And I understand that, but so I'm just saying David Savard, it's not like David Savard can't put the puck in the net every once in a while, but you can't expect that. I'm just saying, like, if you look at his career, you know, he has actually had some decent offensive numbers, but he's expected to be more of a defensive defenseman. So you're right, Dave. I mean, there's no doubt, even if Chevy says, you know, that improvements might come internally, he still has his eye on a defenseman. So, you know, again, we talked about a bunch of players like, and, you know, Savard and Ekholm make the most sense. And we'll probably be talking about these guys, you know, for the next couple of weeks, unless, you know, Chevy does acquire one of them. But it's because they fill a hole on the Jets that is so obvious here. And even if, you know, a guy like Ville Heinola does get to play some games, I do think that, you know, they're going to look to acquire a defenseman.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk.